Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Star Guys, a podcast about Stargirl on the CW. I am merely a star guy, Alex.
I, too, a star guy, lost in the darkness of space for so long, but returned star guy.
I'm Pete.
And on this episode of Star Guys, we are going to be talking about DC Stargirl Season 2, Episode 1, Summer School, Chapter 1. So, if you haven't watched
subheading.
Subheading on the CW, asterisk, no longer on DC Universe, just so you know. So if you haven't watched the episode, go watch it, of course, because we're going to have plenty of spoilers here as we jump into it. But before we talk about the episode proper and all the plot lines that happened, I'm curious to hear from you. Actually, let me do a quick recap just in case we touch on any of this stuff.
Okay, all right.
But picking up after Season 1, Courtney and the New Justice Society of America, the Young Justice Society of America, have beaten the Injustice Society of America and saved Blue Valley. So that's what we're picking up here. But there's still a couple of dangling plot lines. While Courtney was triumphant, Yolanda, a.k.a. Wildcat, ended up killing Brainwave, one of the big bad guys, so she's dealing with that. Beth's goggles cracked, so she is no longer able to talk to Charles McKnighter, the original Dr. Midnight. And Rick, a.k.a. Our Man, beat Grundy, but let him go. And that's something that he hasn't told anybody, I think, but is still grappling with as well. Shiv, who, a.k.a. Cindy Berman, who is Courtney's arch enemy, was left for dead, but as we know from the end of the season, is not in fact dead, but in fact went through the storage locker or whatever it is of, oh my gosh, the wizard? Is it the wizard or the magician?
The wizard, I believe.
The wizard, sure. Why not? Let's say it is. Nobody correct us. And found the Black Diamond, the home of Eclipso, which is the big bad guy that we seem to be dealing with, at least based on the first episode here. The other things you need to know is that Mikey got a paper route. That's pretty much it.
Well, the name of this show is Star Mikey, I think, the rest of the season is what we're leading up to here, which is a problem for me.
Yes. Well, let's get to that in a second. There are actually a couple of other little dangling things we need to talk about. The biggest one is that Joel McHale showed up again as the original Starman, Sylvester Pemberton, towards the end of the last season, and he pops up here again this episode. And, we also got a little tease of the Shade, who doesn't show up here, another villain slash anti-hero who is going to show up this season. So that's a big thing. With the recap out of the way, I'm sure there's more things we'll touch on, but let's get broad strokes. We love the first season.
Yes.
Went so much harder than it needed to. I know it's hard to judge just on a first episode here, but I'm curious to get your guys' take on what you think as we get into season two. Pete, I know, is a little bit mixed, so I'm curious to get his take. But Justin, let's go with you first.
A little bit mixed, Pete. Shocking. How would you do that to Amy Smart? You're really trying to threaten her. Can't believe you would do that to Amy Smart. Really, I'm surprised to hear that from you.
But honestly, take a minute. Don't come in shooting like that. Come on, man.
I'm just saying.
Give me a chance.
I'm shocked you would say that to your girl, Amy Smart.
Don't.
Truly heartbreaking. This is an interesting pilot. This felt like almost like an epilogue episode at the end of season one in a lot of ways. Really just seamlessly picking up on all the threads without a lot of, hey, remember this happening. And everyone is very much in their separate places, feels almost purposefully like the Justice Society, the Young Justice Society is sort of not into being a team there. When the little mission they're on in this first episode, they're like, this sucks, essentially, which I get. Work sucks. So it does feel like it's a seamless pickup, and we're setting up the summer school aspect of it feels very fun. So yeah, I guess all in all, I liked it.
What about you, Pete?
So here's the thing. Like, I was...
Here's the thing. You hate Amy Smart.
No, don't.
You hate Mikey. Don't like Luke Wilson anymore.
Don't blast me
like
that.
But you liked everything else, so that's why you're mixed, right?
Don't blast me like that.
Okay. Less Luke Wilson, I think we can all agree.
Here's the thing, okay? So I was very excited for most of season one. All of a sudden, season two, it kind of starts slower than I would like and forgets what it is a little bit. Like, Mikey doesn't eat anything in this episode at all. What the fuck is going on? And like, the team doesn't like it. It acts like the team hasn't gone through this crazy shit together. They're strangers to each other. All of a sudden, it just was a slow start. And I was like, come on, though, like, let's get going. And then we got this kind of like new guy who's partners with the shop, who's already like working on the robot. And it's just
Zeke?
Like, yeah,
I
Zeke.
Thought. Getting too much into it.
There is a creepy doll in here that there should be some kind of warning. Like, that was insanely creepy doll, and I wasn't ready for that at all. This show, it did so many different things at once and then walked away, and I was like, what happened? And then someone had a headshot of Mikey, like, all of a sudden he's the bad guy? Like, what?
Well, he just got cast in Stargirl.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't
really
understand.
Exciting. I mean, if we want to talk about that, I know this is the end of the episode, but the note I wrote down is Cindy is going to recruit Mikey. I'm dying. Like, that was legitimately the funniest thing this episode could be, is Mikey's going to be a bad guy and part of the new young ISA.
And the fact that it's sort of like, well, he was really good with that truck last season. He's definitely a future villain in the making.
Mm-hmm. He's going to be a truck man. He's going to be a Transformer, I think.
Who can all right? Pete, do you also love Transformers?
Yeah, he's going to be a Decepticon, probably.
Yeah, he's going to be like, kind of like, I'm going to get you, Optimus Prime.
The intro to like summer school and the song and stuff like that, was fun. That was kind of like a fun moment.
Well, I do think like they're building up what they did last season with the getting the gang together vibe.
Yeah,
like the gang is separate, so like to be able to do that again will be fun with the addition of a Green Lantern. A Thunderbolt.
Zeke.
Or a Thunder, excuse me. Like, we're doing the whole thing again.
You were right about a Thunderbolt. Jakeem Thunder and the Thunderbolt both show up. So
Joe McHale.
I think, as usual, I'm kind of halfway between you guys, though it seems like we all kind of liked it. It feels like there's a very typical thing to do, particularly with action shows, when you get into a second season where you have the hangover episode to pick things up. It's not my favorite thing because it does lead to that slowness that Pete is pointing out, where everybody is grappling with their own emotional intensity, the weight of their actions. Do they still want to be heroes?
Divorce.
And watching the show, we know there's going to be episodes beyond this. So it's frustrating to me because it's not much of a conflict. You know that they're going to accept being a team again. So I understand we need to go through this thing. But to me, the episode really picked up in that first scene, which was creepy and terrifying and
love
so good.
The first scene.
Very strong. And the last scene, despite the Mikey moment that made me bark with laughter, but bring Cindy back. Great song in the background. She's a really good villain. Eclipso has a pretty terrifying voice there. So those were the two big pops for me in the episode, as well as also as a side note, I thought the Green Lantern Stargirl fight was great. That's
so good.
Thing.
That's what I was going to say. I thought that was really excellent. I was surprised how great it was.
That's kind of what I was waiting for too, because the two things that went so hard, if I remember correctly, about the first season, one, the villains, very scary, very terrifying, very intense, and also understandable in the best villain way, but also the fight scenes were really well choreographed and good. So that chunk, not those three scenes, kind of fell a little flat for me with some pops here and there, but I'll also mention I've watched the episode twice now, and I think it worked better the second time through because I didn't have that weight of expectations. I was kind of able to speed through the slower parts of my mind a little bit.
Did you stop for Pat's sick burn of like, you seem to be having a lot of those today?
I thought Luke Wilson was pretty good in this episode. And
I mean, the emotional stuff he's grappling with when he enters and he's like, hey, man, maybe don't go in that door.
Yeah.
Just truly so intense. The stuff he's dealing with.
Like, please don't go through that secret door where I have a giant robot. And that's like all he does to protect that.
Ludicrous.
Well, and for Luke Wilson to have a sidekick, it's quite a way to go down the road here.
Yeah. What did you think, though, Pete? I felt like when I saw that new character, that new mechanic character, that was like you walking on screen the first time you really 100%. Saw yourself on screen.
You really saw yourself there.
I do like the improvements that he's going to be making to the robot, for sure. I mean, you need to get some kind of weapons on there if you're going up against these bad guys.
Well, you got to get a flamethrower there. Come on, man.
It is great. He should put down the banjo so he can actually do some mechanic stuff. The fact that he's holding that. I feel like he's going to come in and just be the, like, Cyrano de Bergerac for Pat. Like, hey, Mikey looks hungry. Here's four bags of Oreos. Could you feed these to your son?
Well, speaking of, like, hungry, it was cool to see Grundy gets down on some chicken. Like that was super cool of our man to like leave out all that fried chicken for Grundy.
Yeah, that was real cool. Well, let's talk through some individual storylines then, because we are jumping all over the place a little bit.
Sure,
let's talk about Rick. The big thing he is dealing with is this Grundy thing. I liked the idea that Grundy is sort of becoming his pet. That seems a natural extension of what happened in the previous season, and I think that's a good direction for him. What do you guys think?
I mean, put yourself in Grundy's shoes, though. Do you want to be a pet? You would just find some food in the woods. Pretty soon you're hooked on
chicken.
This people's food, yeah. And you're like, okay, I guess I'm this guy's pet.
What did you think, though, about the morning DJs that we're talking about him? I feel like they're kind of stealing our bit a little bit.
Yeah, it's fucked up. You know, everybody wants a piece. And no one can be original anymore, so they should go out and live their own lives.
That is one of my favorite, least favorite tropes in TV shows is somebody turning on the radio or the TV and it gives you exactly the information you need.
Yeah.
And the DJ's being like, wow, there's like a big bear coming through eating these things. Okay, well, anyway, we have no news and no programming for the rest of the day.
Anyway, back to some unlicensed music because we can't play the hits. yeah, I agree. It is, especially like, anytime I turn on the radio, I'm like, this is not what I want at all.
Yeah, I would be like, please, somebody give me some information I need. Yeah, it's tough to find it on the radio. But yeah, it is one of those things where it's like, ha, 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 fun. You know, so it's not like, it seems like a little winky. It's not kind of like, you know, so.
And the other part of Rick's storyline is his teacher doesn't believe that he is smart enough to pass his test. Which I think is sending him directly to summer school. That's kind of where we're heading towards here with everybody for a fun 80s style romp. But what do you think's going on with that teacher? She seemed like yet another evil teacher
mean,
at the school.
Yeah. Very mean. Well, I feel like she didn't get enough screen time to be like a character. She was just straight up mean to Rick. Rick Tyler, my cousin. Mm-hmm. Like I just... Yeah. And it just made – it felt like the scene was about Rick being not at all good at covering his rage, his secret identity, anything. He will just ruin everything for almost no reason.
The funny thing about him, just as an actor, I've interviewed him before for the day job, and they had like this media day where the cast was there and they were chatting, and also Jeff Johns that I was – watching, and he's very funny. Like, he is the one who's constantly quipping about everything. Also, Luke Wilson, mind you. And they're two of the most earnest, serious characters of the show. I feel like, hopefully, shows tend to do this over time, particularly, you know, long-running shows. But I feel like they got to embrace that aspect of his character, because the anger works, and he's good at it. But it's much funnier when he's in that alleyway at the beginning, and he's like, you want to check inside of the trash can?
Yeah. Especially like him being angry all the time. It's like, that's not a character either. Like he can be a person as opposed to just being like, why are we doing this? School all day? Come on. It feels a little like, okay, chill, dude. You go to school every day.
Let's talk about Beth's plotline, because we get some big developments with her parents.
Come on,
who,
dude. This is just too much.
Her parents don't like her. Her parents have never liked her.
Yeah, it's just heartbreaking because poor Beth, her parents hate her. The one person who doesn't hate her died, and she's like, come back to me. It's just heartbreaking.
Now, you guys have glasses. Do you have this sort of same relationship with your glasses? Like, it's really important. It's my only, my glasses are my only friend. I really
need
them.
Original owner of these glasses talks to me all the time.
Yeah, poor shame.
That's why
what
you try on so many glasses. You're trying on voices and personalities.
Oh, that's so cool. Exactly. I mean, I have perfect vision, so it's hard for me to understand.
Oh, it's
that.
Weird. You've never brought that up and rubbed it in our face at all.
It's an audio medium, so I'm not using my skills at all. Oh, but wow. I feel
quick,
like I
as
can...
a bad eyeball haver, who said that? Which one of you said that? I can't even tell.
It's me, the fourth host.
It's a little extreme to the point where it feels like Beth's parents are maybe getting a divorce because of her. straight up.
Don't say that, man.
Like, I mean, it is like it's so odd that it feels like it's purposeful. The way they're so mean to her, they don't care about her. It does feel like they're getting a divorce. You're like, I can't be around this kid anymore. I gotta get out of here. And they're both like, yes. Amicable terms. Let's get away from this kid. One of us has to keep her? Oh, no.
Yeah, they're going to get a divorce for Beth.
Oh, come
specifically.
On. Come on, man. That's
and Beth
hard.
Is very nice.
She is
too hard. She's dorky, obviously, but she's just like trying to be so helpful.
Jesus, I can't imagine somebody preparing food like that for me before I leave for the day. That's just magical.
Yeah. And then the other thing, of course, is the goggles. There's a weird moment at the end there with Charles McKnighter popping in briefly, but not knowing who Beth is, which is another rejection of her.
Yeah.
It's so sad. That's I hope they don't go the route of Beth ending up negative, you know, like all this stuff just waiting on her and not her necessarily going bad, but just it turning her into a negative, sad person. Like, she's allowed to go through emotions and arcs, but the thing that is so unique and fun about her is the way Angelica Washington plays her, which is this relentlessly positive person who finds the best in things. And I do like that. I think that's a nice mode for her to play.
I feel like maybe what she'll learn this season is to choose who you need to care for and choose who you need to be nice to. Like, choose your friends, basically. And if her parents are not nice to her and other people
choose
are nice to her.
Choose your goggles. Always choose your goggles. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Choose your goggles. And the goggles are like glasses for flying, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah, they keep the flies out of your eyes.
Nice.
It's a weird way of saying that, I guess. Yolanda's storyline. Let's move on to her.
Well, I'm glad that they're doing this because it's always weird to me in shows or whatever or in comics when somebody kills somebody and then the next thing they're fine. Mm-hmm. And it's like I'm glad that they're taking the time with this character because it's a big deal.
I want a little more from Courtney and Yolanda in this storyline. Courtney has a moment where she says, you're my best friend and I'll always be there for you. Are okay? But I think purposefully Yolanda feels very isolated. She is the one who kills. Courtney doesn't know what actually happened with Brainwave. And it even feels like there's a moment where she is suggesting maybe there would have been a way out to not kill Brainwave. But the other thing going on there that we get to see a little bit when Yolanda goes to confession is it certainly seems like maybe Brainwave is still in her mind. Yeah. Did you guys get that impression as well?
I did get that impression or something. Something's up. I thought it might have been some early effects of Eclipso coming in. Like, she's the most vulnerable because of that darkness she's dealing with. But it very well could be Brainwave as well.
Yeah, like he kind of like launched an earworm or something as he was dying or something.
A brain wave.
Because it's a bummer that they killed off so many members of the ISA. They were really fun, good villains. So it's very comic booky, but the show is very comic booky. I would love it if they brought him back.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, if there's one thing I think we can trust this show is like having the villains be...
Amy Smart.
Having the villains be very intense, very scary, and constantly fucking with our teens. So I'm sure we'll get there.
And let's move over to Courtney, because obviously she's the star girl of the show.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Come on.
What did you think about her plot line here and everything that she goes through? What moments jumped out to you? Pete, you're nodding your head. No, you didn't like it?
Well, she's kind of like strung out on fighting crime, where she's just like, you know, if that thing lights up, she's there, but she's not really kind of like aware of her actions or when it's too much, or, you know what I mean? Like, she stays up all night, like, going through files that, you know, aren't helping. So it's just one of those things where it might come up later, and it's good reason she went through all those files, but I just think that it's like, it's tough to see her, you know, kind of in a bad place, but I think hopefully it'll help lead once she gets kind of a handle on things, then her team will start to get better as well. But yeah, like I said, it's a tough start for this new season. Everybody's not doing well.
She has a new passion, crime fighting. It's a lot of the same way we came into podcasting. We got really into it. We had to be doing it all the time. And then we really relax into a comfortable balance between podcasting and the rest of our lives.
Right, Pete?
We did.
We haven't technically gotten to that part yet.
Oh, but, okay. All right.
But anytime my little microphone lights up, I'm like, time to podcast. Guys, we have to go podcast.
Go ahead, Justin.
I was going to say, I do think her story got a little bit of, felt a little backseat, or at least it was just the little bits of it setting it up. We didn't get to spend a ton of time with her outside of the fights, which I thought were great. So more of that. But I do want a little bit more of, like, she's a full person as opposed to this almost cheerleader for fighting crime.
Yeah, I really like the summer school setup. I think that's a perfect place to put her and everybody else and base things around, like how the first season was really based on 80s movies and Back to the Future and things like that. This is a fun place to put it, also in terms of some capers and shenanigans and things. I almost wish that twist came towards the beginning of the episode. And then we could have dealt with them all being in summer school and get that set up there of whatever that is like. I think that would have been a little more fun. And we wouldn't have had that hangover nature necessarily of the episode. I mean, when it comes to Courtney, though, I did – and I was surprised about this because I think – not that this was my least favorite part, but this felt like the least interesting part of season one. I thought the family scenes were a lot of fun, just everybody hanging out, Luke Wilson, Amy Smart, Mikey – Courtney, when they're talking about their family vacation, I thought it was very cute. Maybe I'm turning it to Pete, but them, what were they chanting when Amy Smart was like, family trip, trip, something like that.
Very normal. It happens all the time in my family.
Yeah. Everybody's dancing around and singing and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, so what happened to Amy Smart and our boy Luke? They're just nice again.
Lake House. I think they were chanting.
Oh, Lake House.
Or that's Yellowstone.
Right.
I don't know.
Yellowstone. It was Yellowstone. Yes, you're right.
Great chance.
I got excited about the mention of Lake
House. Peanut brittle.
I got excited about Lake House because I was like, oh, they're going to do a Lake House episode. You know?
Oh, yeah. Magic Mailbox.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
You mean the movie, The Lake House? Is that what you're trying to talk
Pete
about?
Loves right that
now?
Movie.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
I love seeing Keanu just not doing almost anything other than just standing and talking.
I think when people think of Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock, either separately or as a pair, the Lake House is the main movie they think of first.
Well, one of the reasons he's so angry in John Wick is because of the mailbox. It's the same character.
The mailbox is the same character.
Yeah,
they recast the mailbox.
That's my conspiracy theory. Like, the mailbox from Lake House is in John Wick. I know it. Everybody look for it. It's out there.
Mm-hmm. You have that 4-hour video on YouTube about it, right?
Exactly. God, it's like my voice was so hoarse after it. There was so much shouting about it.
Very loud. Very
explaining
aggressive.
That plot to Lake House. Who Sandra Bullock is.
So Barb and Pat are much better. They figured things out towards the end of the season. They were fighting, but then once they got past the fact
that
Barb's life was threatened and that she was saved by Pat and Courtney, they seem pretty cool with everything. Barb is on board. She knows about the secret identity. It's funny because not funny, but I think that gets to the dynamic from the Stargirl comic book where everybody knows exactly what's going on. So I think that's what they were trying to get to.
Well, I'm curious what Barb's story is going to be. I don't think they'll go to any sort of split between her and Pat again this season. So what's her?
I got it all. It's very clear if you're paying attention. What it's going to be is Barb is going to track down those two old racist grandparents, and she's going to murder them in the streets.
Wow. I love seeing them again. They were so great.
Oh, my God. Why are they still there?
It was very funny to have them be like, hey, let's kill someone. It's like, whoa. You're just old Norwegians or whatever.
Yeah. I wonder how Norwegians who watch the show feel about this, where they're like, that's just how we talk. We talk like that, and we look very stoic. That's who we are. But to us in America, it's terrifying, and that's why
we're like, that's a villain.
Yeah, we're in a war with Norway, as we all know, and have been for most of our lifetimes.
And it's 100%.
Don't forget about the war that we're fighting against creepy dolls.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like if sharks are hanging out, they're not like, we're scary. Right. They're like, we're a shark. I'm just doing my shark thing. Hey, does that surfer look like a seal? I don't know. Let me just bite it. That's what sharks think.
Only one way to find out, you bite it.
Let's talk about the... Go ahead, Justin.
I was just going to transition, so you do yours.
No, I was going to transition, too. Let's see if we're going to transition to the same thing. Let's say it at the same time. One, two, three, Starman.
Mikey. Oh. Same idea, because we all know Mikey's a future Starman. Mm-hmm. I thought it was so weird having Mikey be like, hey, Dad, how's about I get a magic light bulb or something, huh? Like, what if I got a gun with that shoots radiation or something? I don't know.
I know we talked about this with the first season, but there was such big co-workers vibes from that scene with Mikey and Pat when he came in. Even the music was sitcom, like,
100%. Like, he's a Kramer.
Back from work.
Hey, paper route.
Come this on, paper route's killing me.
Pat 100% is the stiff, clean part of the odd couple, and Mikey's the best. 100%. Back to his paper route. Can't hold down a job. Can't pay the rent. Constantly getting them into shenanigans.
What's going to happen with Mikey? The fact that he was the photograph at the end.
He better not join the bad guys team. It's going to be too much.
Oh, I hope he does.
I think he is. I think he 100% will. That's a crazy thing to do if they're just going to be like, nope, that's it. Just an idea.
I think Mikey and Zeke are going to team up and be their own kind of like special unit.
Leaving out Pat? God, why do you hate Pat so much?
Oh my God, you watch your mouth. I really hope Pat gets to punch somebody out this season because that's a fun, you know, that just to go back to that part. And there's a bunch of memes. There's a bunch of memes of it that doesn't get old watching. So
Zeke to be with Amy Smart? Because Zeke.
Come on,
like because Zeke is sort of the you.
Yeah, it's your insert character.
Nope.
He's like, you know what you need? A flamethrower in this hand. And you need someone to, a real man to be with your wife. A man like Pete LePage in Philadelphia.
You want me to lay some pipe down there, sir?
Stereotypical car mechanic here. but like Mikey, I think he is going to... I think he's going to be a bad guy.
That was the total indication. I don't know why they think he would be a good recruit for the ISA or anything like that, but that was her trump
card. He's got inside knowledge of their house. Like,
is he going to be? Everybody else is totally clear. They're going to get young Fiddler. They're going to get young Sportsmaster / Tigress. They're going to get young Icicle. And then what is Mikey exactly?
Aspiring stand-up comedian.
Mikey is
I got to do a weekend at the Chuckle Hut. How am I going to do this fucking paper route?
He knows
when
they're going to be. It's like, oh, okay, this is the perfect time to attack when she's this and Pat's over here.
Why? What is the motivation there? That he doesn't get a robot suit so he turns evil?
What's his skill set? He's useless.
He has the truck and that's it.
He couldn't even make a volcano out of chocolate or whatever.
And that's easy. Everybody can do that. Real quick, let's talk about Starman, because that's an intriguing scene there. So Joel McHale does show up again, goes to a diner, and he is tracking down not Pat, but Maggie, Pat's ex-wife. We knew she was out there somewhere, potentially, because he has a kid with her named Mikey, who we were just talking about. But what does... First of all, is this the actual Starman? Is this the actual Sylvester Pemberton? And either way, what does he want with Maggie?
Yeah, this was such a mystery. To throw this in the middle of the episode, I was like, oh, weird to see him. Weird he has a whole other plot line, and we don't know anything about it. I got to think he's tracking down something that he left behind, essentially. Maybe there's another cosmic rod he's going to have or something like that so that he can get back in being – what are you laughing about? He can get back to being Starman.
I don't think there's an extra cosmic rod just laying around.
Well, let me throw this out to you. In the comic book Starman, which a lot of this sort of sprang from, there are many cosmic rods.
Oh.
The one that that Courtney has was sort of the final form, but Ted Knight built, I want to say, like 6 or 7 rods that different people have. And Sylvester Pemberton in the comics didn't even have a rod for most of his time. He had a belt that allowed him to fly. So I feel like he's going to end up having some sort of piece of technology that lets him do something. And the other cosmic rods were less sophisticated than the one that Courtney has. One could just shoot stuff. One was mostly for flying. Like he's a scientist. So of course they're going to be bad or worse versions.
But I want to get back to something Alex mentioned, that the fact that like he seemed different this time back, almost not like it wasn't Starman, because he wasn't acting very Joel McHale like he was in the first time that we saw him.
Yeah, the first season he was in front of a green screen making fun of talk shows, right? So that's Joel McHale. Wasn't, so I think he's playing a different character.
Yeah, but he was a little bit more Joel McHale-y in the times that he was busting balls, he was having some fun.
You think he's going to go back to community? Series. He's going to go back to community college?
No, I don't think that.
Season?
What do you think Summer he ordered school? At the diner? I mean, he got the chicken fried steak, but do you think he got the soup?
Oh my God.
In any case, I'm kind of with Pete on this. I think there's a possibility that he is some other villain masquerading as Starman. We get a bunch of them. Well, we get a bunch of them mentioned by Courtney as she's going through the JSA files.
Yep.
We hear about Per Degaton a couple of times.
We find out
he was banished by the Flash to an alternate dimension. We know that John Wesley Shipp as the Flash is going to show up later in the season. I believe it's going to be a flashback and not like a time travel
flashback.
Thing. I get it. But we hear Per Degaton mentioned then, and then later on in the episode as well, Courtney very rightly mentions that if he's a time traveler, even though they beat him, he could be anywhere. So yeah,
please, no time traveling. There's already so much happening in this episode. Don't add time traveling.
I will say, Jeff Johns loves Per Degaton, like uses him all the time in his JSA run. It seems like the sort of thing that would tie into legacy for Stargirl, maybe not this season, maybe next season, but I could see some sort of reveal where this Starman is not actually Starman, but actually Per Degaton in disguise or something like that.
Elaborate disguise.
Yeah. And those for listening, Per Degaton is basically like a Nazi version of Kang from the Marvel Universe, just floats around on a platform, travels through time, and hates the JSA. I think that's fair, right? The other ones that are mentioned, just to throw them out there, Blackbriar Thorn, we find out was taken down by Green Lantern, Baron Blitzkrieg, Gentleman Ghost, who is a very fun, very weird villain. So we hear about all of those, as well as the ISA members. But Pergamon seems the best suspect to be.
And we're getting Shade, I think.
Yes.
That's very a soon creepy this season. Doll, right?
No.
What the fuck?
So the creepy doll at the beginning, that's an Eclipso scene. We kind of blasted past that, but we see a young kid who clearly has been taken over by the Black Diamond. Eclipso is a being who is trapped inside of the Black Diamond. Essentially, what he does is tempts people, and then when they cross the line, he sucks their souls, is pretty much it. So that's exactly what he's doing to that kid, who I believe – is, I mean, certainly related to Charles McKnighter, probably his daughter or something like that.
It's right on the mailbox. Again, yeah. The mailbox is telling the story. Because the mailbox is what's up. You guys don't even know. Listen, no, listen. Dude, I'm just saying, goes back to John Wick's dog lives in a mailbox. Awesome. Whoa.
That's nuts.
That's the only time John Wick the thing with the doll dog is
that's just showing a little bit of corruption of Calypso. If you saw the face was burnt on one side, the same way the kid's face kind of gets corrupted. That's what a Calypso looks like. He looks like an eclipse on his face. He's like a big jacked elf man with an eclipse on his face.
Yeah. The hat the Calypso wears is dumb. I'm curious that they're not going to put that little like skull cap on him, but it's truly a total eclipse of the face. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Bonnie Tyler, Rick Tyler's aunt.
Nice.
All right, before we get to our final section here, any other moments you want to call out from the episode?
I just want to say I loved that beginning scene. I feel like the horror, it felt like a horror movie short. And the fact that we're getting that feels like they're like, I know we don't have a lot of villain stuff happening in this episode, but here's the kind of stuff we're going to be doing this season. Very cool.
One of the movies I'll mention that Geoff Johns said he was inspired by for the season, or at least they looked to, was Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh,
and
boy.
You can really get a feel of that, I think, in the first scene.
Yeah, that's what scares me, is that we're heading down a path that's going to be creepier than maybe we're ready for.
And I'm curious how Green Lantern, how Jade, I'm assuming, is going to play in here. That was great. It feels like she will be a leader on the team and make Courtney mad because Courtney's the leader. And I think all the other heroes will maybe go toward Jade because she has more experience. And Courtney's like, but I kick a lot. So, okay, let's just have Jay be in charge.
Let me ask you guys, if you live in a small town, do you think that, like, all the townspeople do headshots and then, like, pass them out to each other? Or how do you think, like, the small town gets their headshots done so that evil people can kind of collect the stuff?
Well, you have to audition to be a neighbor.
Oh, right, right.
Hello, I'm Justin. I'm here for the part of your neighbor. I'd like to start with hedge clipping. Yes, of course.
Thank you.
I really want this part. I've already bought the house.
The resume is not stapled on the back. I like it when the staples line up on the resume, and it's not.
Wow, that's some old school acting shit right there. Really, that's not the way it's done anymore.
Nope, definitely not.
All right, I think we can wrap up then. Before we do,
I would just like to say...
Classic Pete.
Yeah, that, you know, we got some great shots of the Buick in this. I was happy about that. Pat doing some classic dad stuff. The whole, like, principal's office awkward thing where he was trying to cover for Court and then brought up catfighting was like, ooh, that's not good. That was just, like, it's fun to see him kind of, like, dad it up. And have those kind of like in between moments. So, you know, Pat deserves a lot of kudos.
Yeah, I guess he does have dad energy at some point in this show.
Oh, that actually reminds me of a fact that, Pete, I think you're going to like a lot. Again, at this media day, Luke Wilson mentioned that he was filming in Atlanta for DC Stargirl. You know what else was filming in Atlanta for a month was Loki. So Owen Wilson and Luke Wilson shared a house together for a month and lived together.
Oh, come on. That's just nice.
Yeah. Is that your ideal living situation? You, Luke Wilson, and Owen Wilson, and maybe Wilson the volleyball?
I mean, that's a lot of Wilson, but yeah.
You should audition to be their neighbor, Pete. You would crush that. one more thing I want to say, actually. On the marquee, when they're walking through town, we get The Adventures of Mark Merlin. Mm-hmm. Which I thought is a DC character, a very random DC character, and an odd one to put on there, I thought.
They did last season do a similar thing with the marquee and the posters outside, where it was a bunch of, I think there was like a Challengers of the Unknown poster or something like that. So it could be a tease for something coming up, or it could be a way of them throwing in another old school DC reference either way.
Yes, I agree with you, but this one felt very esoteric. Challengers of the Unknown, I feel like Geoff Johns loves those characters, so I was like, oh, that's just a cool thing for him. Mark Merlin was like a magician from who like was around in the like I want to say 50s, but yeah. never was part of like the superhero universe by any means. So I'm curious what that is. That a nod to the Wizard or some sort of any of those older villains from last season coming back or what? I don't know.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. All right, let's wrap it up, though, and talk about who we thought the star of the episode was. Pete, who was the star of the episode?
Ooh, that's tough. I mean, you got to go with Amy Smart. You know, the way that she, you know, lights
yellow
up a room.
Stone. Yellow Stone.
Great to see her back.
Lake House. Lake House. Family trip.
It's great to see her back.
Mikey. I guess I would great. Obviously, I think everyone agrees she was sort of the star of the show, Pete.
Thanks.
She truly is the star girl. I guess I want to give it up for the introduction of Jade. I thought that was a great moment. I'm looking forward to see how she joins the team and makes problems / friendships with Courtney.
Jade was great. That action scene was great. I think I'll give a shout out to Beth, though, in this episode. Nice. Always really like Beth. I think she had the most of, what? You're nodding no?
She's such a dork.
Dude, she's going through a lot.
Yeah, yeah, she gets the most emotional storyline. Yeah. I thought the shot of her sitting with the dinner alone.
Oh,
so sad.
It is. That's definitely sad.
Oh, it's what your kids do when you guys aren't home yet.
Maybe Chapel, the real person, will listen to this podcast and feel a little bit better about things, you know?
That's really nice. You glasses people all stick together.
Who said that? Which one of you said that?
I'm the ghost.
If you'd like to support this podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast on YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Stargirl. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, follow, and listen to the show. At StarGuysPod on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, StarGuys out.
Hey, DJ stuff, make sure you change your refrigerator.
Oh, that's the thing you need to remember to do.
DJ stuff. Oh, my God.